from our generation write a check.
Yeah.
You know, we give money and we, you know, but what millennial, what younger people want, he said, is they just, they want to be involved. They want to work. They want to do the work. So I'm just throwing that out there.
They want to get dirty. And when they see us, when they see us, and I'm going to include myself in the us, the collective us, when they see us just writing a check, that rings as hypocritical to them. Because you're not seeing the face of the people you're helping. Does that make sense?
Yeah, but he didn't see it as being hypocritical.
He's here now, so you'd be quoted, Michael.
Yes, I thought of it. He said, well, you already write a check, and that your page want to get involved. So.
Yeah. Okay. I think you're right.
Yeah.
Herbie and then Jim.
Okay.
Two things. One thing is we've looked at this social justice thing over and over again. There's a big need for it, but often within the generation is confused with the underdog. We just heard that earlier in the presentation. And so I think you've got to be really clear on helping them see very clearly what really justice means. I think you were stating here. The other thing is if you look at the generation,
that's okay.
This must be after.
You're still thinking about job. It's okay.
I'll defer and come back.
Okay, Jim?
A couple thoughts. One, in terms of millennials seeing us being involved in social justice, I think part of the problem is that a lot of us have been.
Yeah.
But we're at a season of life that we're not going to be out doing some of the things that that we did in our 20s and 30s when we were their age. In other words, we had some of the same passions. And for me and for Karen in our ministry, for example, in Russian Jewish ministry, we were involved in all kinds of social justice stuff at the time. And then we realized over time, well, we can't fix the world, you know. All and Lord, what have you called us to? You've called us to reaching souls. Mm-hmm. And so we didn't throw all the social justice away, but we had to tailor it down to, you know, our primary mission, which was sharing the gospel with Russian Jews. And yet, you know, wanting to change things and make the world a better place, you know, that was obviously still a passion. But I think, so that's one aspect, that some of these things were done in our youth. Now, as we're older, we're in a different season of life. There are different issues and priorities involved. And I think maybe a lot of, one thing millennials may not see is what was our past? You know, where did we brought us to the point where now, yeah, we're the ones writing checks and we're the ones, you know, leading organizations and that sort of thing that just didn't happen over by itself, but it happened because it does build on a structure, on a foundation. Not to say we shouldn't do more and that we can't do more now, but we are, you know, more preparing ourselves to turn it over to them at some point. And anyway, so there's that dynamic. The other aspect real quickly is just Tikkun Olam itself. This is really important, and I think it's really at the heart of understanding a lot of, you know, the Jewish consciousness today, not just millennials, but the whole community. I think there's something very deep in the Jewish psyche and the Jewish soul to repair the world, you know? And you see that in all different facets of life and culture, and so many people who are not spiritual at all, Jewish people, still feel, you know, at the end of their lives or maybe at some point, they want to contribute, they want to make a change. And so there's, but the other aspect of it is, while it's noble and good and right and all those things, it's not biblical in the sense of God is the one who repairs the world.
Right.
So in other words, our priority always has to remain as believers that the gospel is first. The gospel has to change lives. But we can't have that in isolation either. And I think that's the whole point. If we keep our priorities straight, and we have the gospel first, but say, yes, these other things should be done too. We should be visiting addicts. We should be, you know, witnessing to prostitutes. We should be out there with the poor and needy and widows. If we're not doing any of that, there's a problem. If we're doing just that, that's a problem too. So anyway, that's my perspective on that.
Right, can I respond real quick? You know, the Harleys and I were talking about this yesterday while we were waiting. It's an interesting dynamic, and this, my history nerdness is going to come out. In the 1920s, we had the rise of fundamentalism, which we needed to have. On one, I guess I'm going to do the right. right hand. This is my right hand, so I'm going to go over here. And so we had, which was necessary. And then we had Walter Rauschenbusch, who created the social gospel movement, who just went social. And this is in the States. And so we had this dichotomy in the States, which you had to be either Walter Rauschenbusch and the social gospel movement, or R.A. Torrey and the fundamentals over here. And I think we felt it was an either-or choice.
Right.
And I think that we in the States need to find a way to meet in the middle. And I agree with you, tikkun olam is not the answer unless you meet in the middle with the gospel.
Right.
And so we have to find a way to find a both and, not an either or approach. And that's what I was trying to say. And I would say, yes, I mean, you know, most of you grew up or were children of the 60s, and I was a child of the 70s and the early 80s, but go back and tell your stories of how you ended the war and how you changed the world, because I don't think a lot of the younger people in your organizations know that. How you changed the world, and give them the opportunity to change the world, not in the future, but now. Give them the opportunity to do what you did. And I took off a slide this morning, and I wish I had left it on. Don't make the same mistakes. And I took this slide off, and I wish I had left it on. Don't make the same mistakes that the Jewish Mission Organization of the 1960s and the 1970s did to you guys that we could possibly be making in the 2000s. Because there were a lot of mistakes made in the 1960s and the 1970s that created a lot of divisions that were unnecessary. We don't need to be making those same mistakes today. And I took that slide off because I thought, oh, that's going to create. And I wish I had left it in. Because we don't have to do that. I think Herbie got his train back.
Well, you can't hold the train very long. Martin, you can hold your question, right? You won't forget it. Yeah, okay. So let's Herbie do his now.
So just in the truth, and that them asking, being a place where they can ask questions back to, I think that has always been even what we wanted growing up. But I think what I'm seeing more is not just that they can ask questions to us, but we might not give them just the answer, but we might also ask them questions.
Exactly.
So that it's so we allow them to find, and that's the way we want people to do
and
with
they
us.
Love
help
that.
Us find the truth.
And millennials love that, by the way.
And that's what the rabbi told us yesterday. I'll answer your questions with another question.
And this is very much, I think it's very much from a Jewish perspective, and very much what us Gentiles can learn very much too.
I was just going to agree with the first part of what Jim said. You know, back when we were growing up, you know, at age 13, I was a bus captain for the next 7 years. Yeah, lying, meeting that cold bus at 7 o'clock in the morning and going and picking up kids. And we had the energy to do that. Nothing held us back because we didn't, you know, all, we came from home. We were still in school or high school, whatever, and we didn't have anything to hold us back, and we were able to put all of our energy and things into, you know, doing things for the Lord. But as we get older, you know, we don't have that anymore. So then, you know, we write checks and try to support the younger generation and what they're doing and their outreaches.
I'll have to go home and tell my husband that he's in the wrong place. You know, he's older than me, so he's old. Every Wednesday night, he hangs on the streets of our city with the drunken and the homeless, and for a feeding program. I need to tell him that he should have done that when he was young. He's too old. Anyway,
David had a question.
Yeah, I just wanted to ask.
That's okay.
Okay.
David and Herbie, they're losing their trust. Yes. Okay, Lillian.
Just
short observation from Israeli youth. We don't call them millennials. I mean, we're not used to this term that much, but that generation that served now in the army, they come back and have the crisis question that they face first time and ask themselves in the army, because they've been taught in messianic homes and congregations that the deeds and the showing love and the action is very important in their life and soul of the world. They come to the army and they see a lot of good Jewish people who don't know the Lord and do the same as they do. They behave very nicely to each other. They do good things. They support. They defend. They are in the army. It's very obvious and clear. And sometimes they cannot behave as those good people without Jesus. So there are crisis issues that they bring for the soldiers' conferences or youth conferences where we serve with them together is what's the difference?
Yeah.
If they behave better, so what's the whole point? And our counsel to them that your identity is not in your behavior. You can find so many people who do good deeds, Litakenet Olam, but they don't have Jesus, and your brokenness and your weakness, that's the difference. That's where you reach to Jesus and not to deeds and behavior. So they're finding themselves in this.
That's why I say it's the both and. And I think a great idea for those of you who are congregational leaders is, you know, when a student reaches bar bat mitzvah age in a traditional congregation, they have a project. And I haven't seen in a messianic congregation, and I could be wrong, maybe Barry, your congregation does.
Yeah.
Y'all do. So thank you. I think maybe we should have that in for messianic congregations. Have a bar bat mitzvah project. So they can see our faith is not doesn't require works, but it is manifested in works.
Gary, was that a hand?
No.
It wasn't. Okay. I've got one last question, not because of time, not because I want to show up, but because the time is there. And that is, you know, it relating to what you were saying, Jim, about, you know, we were doing all these things, but we realized we had to center in on what was really essential, saving souls. Something like that? Am I misquoting you?
No. We realized we couldn't do everything that we wanted to do.
Right. And then we were doing the most important
thing. And we had to focus
on the
gospel.
Right. So let me ask then, David and Dan, with the outreach that you're having in Jerusalem, are you losing your focus on the most important thing by the way you have, by the initiatives you're doing with your campaign in Jerusalem? Because if picking up the garbage, you know, and all these other things come sort of on the same level, a way of together demonstrating what this is all about, are you losing your focus, according to what Jim is saying?
I wasn't saying it.
I was trying not to put words.
Oy vey.
My
client
was
misquoted.
Okay, very good.
Thank you, counselor.
I was trying to say it, if I understood you right.
Okay. I'm definitely for both hands. So. Okay.
That's what I'm trying to say. But you
guys
understand
me right. Well, okay. We're not losing our focus at all. And I think that in many ways, part of the problem in Israel, and part of the reason why I think Israel is unreached with the gospel, is because of their presence in Israel and its people. In Israel as sites, as Disneyland. It hasn't really reached out to more people in the land. And where the church goes and do short-term missions all over the world, they don't come to Israel to do short-term ministry, of course. Hmm. Not everybody. There are some who do it, but just not enough if you compare the tourism versus those churches who come to do ministry. So we want to mobilize the church and to show them Jerusalem and the people of Jerusalem so they can come. And then every group that's going to come, any church that's going to come, they are going to get training in Jewish evangelism. So as they go and serve, and we know that the people are going to ask them, why you guys here, what are you doing? All the organizations, by the way, that we're partnering with, and especially the non-believer organizations, they all know that they're all open to Christians coming in and serving with them. So they know that the churches that are going to come in are going to be believers, evangelical Christians, and we know that they're going to enter into hundreds, maybe even thousands of conversations, and then they're going to get training to make those be about the gospel. So as they serve, as they build relationship, we know that they're going to show the love of Messiah, and also in word, and as they serve, of course, in deed as well. So I don't think that we're losing our focus at all. I think that we are trying to maybe be a little bit more holistic with the gospel, and not just by word, but by deed as well. So living the gospel as well as speaking in the gospel. And I think that that is communicating the gospel completely. So.
Are you aware of this movement called Loving My City? You find it in several places, in cities in Europe, where Christian communities go out into the city to do this. I mean, in my city, there are some youth groups that are involved in this. Copenhagen has it as well. I know Amsterdam has it. Loving Amsterdam, Loving Copenhagen, Loving Aarhus.
There's also love, like in the States, or there's love San Francisco.
But the idea is that what they do, they serve coffee and invite in the conversations. They have sites where they ask people to bring their bikes and they fix up their bikes and, you know, do sort of that. But it's a way of, so why are you doing this? Your bike is broken, that's why I'm doing it. You know? And there are no more sort of strings attached to it, but it creates a conversation around it. So, all right, I think, don't we need to stand up and take a glass of water or